Nerds and geeks, hold on to your seats because it's about to go down.
Welcome to Nerdorama, the voice of the Nerd Nation. I'm Mo Kelly, he's Tawala Sharp, and together we bring you your daily dose of nerd news, analysis, and conversations with the best and brightest of the nerdverse.
This holiday season is going to look and feel very differently than previous years, making it more important than ever to surround ourselves with the things that remind us to be grateful for what we have, the people who bring us joy, and the communities around us. Trend spotter Dana Isom Johnson is the trend expert for Etsy and a judge on the NBC competition Making It.
I love plants. Now, the funny thing is I love them, but I don't keep them alive at my house. That's my husband's job. But I can make the living room look hella cute. I'm about inspiring people, hopefully, to get creative in whatever creativity means to you, and just bringing attention to that.
My name is Dana Isom Johnson, and I am the trend expert at Etsy.com.
I've been doing this role now for a little over 2 years. In being in this role, I now have the incredible opportunity to work on NBC's latest show, Making It, and myself and Simon Junin are the judges.
Shall we?
I'd love to.
Okay.
I've seen peg dolls a million times at this point, but I was very impressed, and it ties very well back to their love story, which is the most important thing.
She joins me now with tips for gifts and for supporting small businesses this holiday season. Dana, thank you for coming on today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm pleased that we finally made it to the holiday season, but I'm also kind of like overwhelmed, with how this holiday season is going to be so very different. It's going to be one long Cyber Monday, it feels like, as opposed to the traditional indoor retail shopping. But the good news is we have a strong e-commerce economy, which has been practicing for this moment, you could say. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And just as you said, I mean, I think more than ever, this is really the time that shoppers want to go the extra mile to find thoughtful and unique items that are really going to make this very unusual time a little bit brighter.
How have you prepared or enhanced what you do given the pandemic? I'm quite sure you already were very comfortable in this space, but did you have to, train people around you, be it friends or family members, to more embrace this e-commerce space?
Well, I think it's just about, being open to really the way that things are changing right now. And so you just kind of have to say, okay, this is happening. But how is that going to affect the items that I choose for my family and friends? How can I make decisions to make sure that the purchases I'm making are thoughtful, are meaningful, and they're not just contributing to stuff, but actually sharing love and making sure they know that the items that they chose were chosen out of great thought and love and meaning. Even if you don't get to see them, there's a way to show that you care from a distance.
All right. With that as an introduction, let's get into it. What are some of your recommendations as far as specific types of gifts that we may consider giving to our loved ones or even just people in the office?
You got it. So actually, Mo, the first thing is that people should really feel good is that every item that I'm going to talk through today is actually a part of our week-long Cyber Week sales event. So everything is up to 60% off. And you'll feel even better knowing that you're supporting a small business, which, of course, they need the support now more than ever. But one of the items that I really love that is super thoughtful and a great trend that has been sweeping Etsy are these handwritten cutting boards. And basically what that means is all those incredible recipes that you have from loved ones from over the years or even generations that have been passed down, their actual handwriting can be transferred onto the cutting board. So it's really special and allows you to pass this down for generations to come.
Do you have something that you could recommend maybe for the men who are to say, well, I have some, you know, some young men in my life. I want to make sure I give them these manly gifts or something which is more gender specific or ego specific, I should say.
Sure. You know, I think a really great gift for men and for guys, young boys, are these personalized kind of beauty kits, but beauty kits for guys. So beard oils and facial creams,
yes,
and all those things that make them feel very indulged and spa-like, because so many of us are not able to take advantage of the spa or even, you know, the barbershop right now. So however you can make things a little easier and a little more indulgent for your friends and family, that's always great to make them feel nice.
I think you touched upon something there. I believe many of us are experiencing a degree of what I would call COVID fatigue. We are tired of having to deal with this. We understand the seriousness of it, but still, this is something which is really put upon for all of us. Do you have possibly those gifts in that same vein for self-care, for people who just want to make sure that they're taking care of themselves as we move through this pandemic together?
Oh, for sure. Well, two things that that come to mind, especially in terms of when you're gifting someone else, for those people who aren't able to see someone right now or see their loved ones, a lot of Etsy sellers, there's an emerging trend in care packages. And this is really wonderful because you're able to curate a box that speaks directly to their interests. So whether that be beauty focused and you want to send someone, you know, bath bombs or facial creams or whatever, or they're avid readers or they're avid home chefs or even musicians, you can work with a lot of Etsy sellers to get those interests all in one box. And so you're sending your love through the mail, this care package idea that I really love. And for those people who are wanting to buy something for themselves, I am a fan of gratitude journals that have been popping up on Etsy for a little while now. And it's a really wonderful item for you to gift yourself, to focus on what you're grateful for in this very moment. Even though it's a difficult time, there's always something to be grateful for. And so many Etsy sellers have created those items that I really love.
I'm quite sure someone is listening who would like to follow up with you. How can people either reach out to you or follow you and also get more suggestions from you?
Absolutely. So to hear more items and see more items that are included in our week-long cyber sales event, you can go to Etsy.com/cyber. And you can also follow me on Instagram, and that's just at my name. So at Dana Isom Johnson, Dana with a Y.
She is trend spotter, Dana Isom Johnson. You heard it right there. She's the trend expert for Etsy and a judge on the NBC competition Making It. Dana, thank you so much for coming on today. I wish you nothing but a happy holidays and happy shopping as we move through the system. Be well.
Thank you. Stay safe. Happy holidays.
Hello and welcome to The Buy Pile, the only online comic book review column that will be back much sooner than Umbrella Academy Season 3. My name is Hannibal Taboo, and you can find everything you'd like to know about me on HannibalTaboo.com, H-A-N-N-I-B as in bounce, A-L, T as in tough, A-B as in bounce, U.com. That's also on social media, @HannibalTaboo, Twitter, Instagram, Plurk, Tumblr, Facebook. That Sabak card that's stuck in your sleeve that you're waiting on playing at just the right moment, the inside of cockpit of a Veritech on the top of the SDF-1, and everywhere that you'd like to be. These reviews are for books that came out November 18th, 2020. And there are four sections of the Buy Pile. The first is the title of Buy Pile for books that are so good they demand to be purchased in the moment or have come from a series that have had at least three purchase-worthy issues in a row and therefore has earned a spot until there are three not purchase-worthy issues in a row. Let's begin with Commanders in Crisis number 2 from Image Comics, with the creative team of Steve Orlando, David Tinto, Francesca Carotenuta, and Fabio Amelia. The first issue of this groundbreaking new series was all about bowling the reader over with the sheer volume and spectacle of its innovative idea. Somehow, almost impossibly, this issue takes a different tactic by making the happenings here personal as personal as they could be, revealing the characters behind the powers while not sacrificing the plot. Five superheroes have come to a world without any superheroes in it, each having something in common. All five were pioneering personalities on worlds that died, each one given outrageous powers and a chance to stop it from happening again. Writer Steve Orlando does a great job keeping the story moving, but giving quiet moments of introspection to powerful people. For example, the post-coital scene could have been campy or prurient, but instead it had a poignancy that deepened the meaning of the cold open. Likewise, when the character Seer had a world-breaking problem to address, she still found time to help ordinary people, and in doing so, ended up on the right track. It should go without saying that the crafty visuals of David Tinto, Francesca Caro Tenuto, and Fabio Amelia go from cars flying off a broken bridge to thoughtful considerations of how to be responsible with power with equal aplomb. Best to say it anyway, because this visual team makes each panel mesh well together, as the whole story is as smooth as a train ride from Los Angeles to San Diego. To bring out so many new ideas, so many fresh concepts, and such a big swing is hard, but to do it well two issues in a row? That's really something to see, so that rating would be buy. Next, and this is a pleasant surprise, Avengers Marvel Snapshot number 1 from Marvel Comics with the creative team of Barbara Randall Kessel, Staz Johnson, Tom Palmer, Jim Charlampidis, and Ariana Maher. This is a remarkably well put together comic book, a done in one that swings the camera around to ground level and shows lives affected in real time by the gigantic events of Marvel's history. Using a letter home as a framing device, the protagonist, Carrie, is a relatively new transplant to the Big Apple from Ohio, working as an EMT and relying on the kindness of friends to store her things for more than 3 months while waiting on an apartment to become available. The very, very clever script from Barbara Randall Kessel paints a picture of Carrie that is very different from the truth as the story reveals through a series of anecdotes and some truly challenging circumstances. Her morning jog, which, based on both the events and her outfit, took place in the early 1980s, is interrupted by Red Freaking Ronin in the Giant Robot's second adventure. Look that one up. It's wild stuff. The titanic technological terror is almost an afterthought to the real story, as Carrie has a run-in with an indigenous American NYPD officer, Jay Sero, and they end up helping civilians, quote, into the nearest public safety protection facility. Safety measures that make too much sense to be a retcon, factored into the city's history after the original Human Torch clashed with Namor and the city was swamped by a tidal wave. To keep the crowd calm, Carrie and Jay trade stories about run-ins with heroes and villains, Wonder Man has no game, Iron Man confronts a drunken cop, encouraging others to do the same and not think about the massive destruction outside or the man hanging on to life by a thread due to a punctured lung. There are at least three very clever through lines here. Iron Man, having a love life in the big city, and the aforementioned apartment issue. They keep being woven through the tale in such delicate, brilliant ways that when they all resolve, it's like a perfect chord from a harmony of voices. The visual work of Staz Johnson, Tom Palmer, Jim Charlampidis, and Ariana Maher wonderfully echoed the 1980s in New York, as far as we saw in that period of comics, not like, say, The Get Down. With dynamic visual stylings, they're not as slick as many more modern works, but still have a real finished feel to them. It's a superbly entertaining comic book craft, presented in a self-contained way that nonetheless fits perfectly into the history of the fictional universe. That rating would be buy. Next up, we have Big Girls number 4 from Image Comics with the creative team of Jason Howard and Phonographics. Yeah. The pages of this issue take to heart the Jason Derulo lyrics, "When the roof caved in and the truth came out." A series of flashbacks and revelations from High Marshal Tannic reveal the truth about the Preserve's secret enemy, Gulliver, and why the two of them are poised to throw everything they have at the other's destruction for matters. Things that matter, rather. Writer-artist Jason Howard really gives this issue a Shakespearean turn, exposing character motivations and rationales for hard decisions. As well, the toe-to-toe battle between the arguable protagonist, Ember, and the more experienced Apex has a surprising conclusion. The facial expressions, body language, and actions that develop this plot are superbly engaging. It's hard to discuss details of this issue without some extremely pointed spoilers, but suffice it to say that this issue asserts the presence of only shades of gray, leaving no rooms for the absolutes of good and bad, as a global contagion leaves lots of people making hard choices. Ember goes through the most here as she learns new information about her history and the people she works with. Tannic and Gulliver are far more set on their past, but even the fearsome Apex has a softer side. Again, it's always important to note that this work of brilliance is not the product of some gigantic creative team, not generated by a huge office full of infrastructure. Jason Howard, with only the lettering from Phonographics, made every bit of this, from ideas to line work to inks to colors. There's not even an indication that there's an editor. That's not to be underappreciated, as it's not an easy thing for a huge team of people to do. This title, pardon the pun, is a gigantic accomplishment, so that rating would be buy. The next section of our reviews is called the Honorable Mentions, the books that were good, but maybe not good enough to get your actual money out of your pocket. Sorry to say, nothing here rates that this week, so yikes. Moving on, the third section of the reviews is called the Meh Pile, for books that, well, they happened. They weren't necessarily good, but they weren't necessarily bad, and the good and bad elements kind of washed each other out, and kind of a tide plane of whatever. There we find Batman number 103 from DC Comics, with the creative team of James Tynion IV, Carlo Pagulian, Danny Mickey, Guillaume March, David Barron, and Clayton Cowles. The last issue of this series was terrible, honestly. It had a lot of problems as it introduced Ghostmaker, a mysterious, twisted reflection of Batman that's been battling back and forth with the Dark Knight detective since they were children. Logistics of that aside, there's still huge questions that don't have plausible answers. This issue, however, at least has an advantage. In being funny, it managed to be somewhat entertaining. Two caped combatants start fighting as the very confused teenage vigilante Clown Hunter watches Batman versus Ghostmaker. And Oracle, the sometimes Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, is unable to get a bead on him. "I can't see whoever you're fighting from any angle," she says over comms, "and his voice is distorted." "You won't get him on record," Batman answers without stopping the swings of his fists. "You won't find his name in any international database either. You need to stop trying to get a look at him. If you brush up against his ghost net, his computers will eat yours alive." Now, if he was talking to Tim Drake, maybe even Lucius Fox, even Alfred Pennyworth, God rest his soul, this would be one thing. But this is Oracle. According to both Gail Simone and Denny O'Neill, people who would know, she is at least as smart as Batman, if not smarter. So Ghostmaker is, as of this issue, not only as good as Batman, if not better in hand-to-hand combat, but also as good as Oracle at technology. Come on now. It's in print now, so it's canon, and we have to accept that this man, who has left zero noticeable imprint on the world, possibly by design, is in essence by himself as good as two of the smartest and most effective people in the DCU. Okay, sure. He's probably made such a huge impact against threats we never even imagined, and I mean, yeah, whatever. Then that leads to two interesting points of comeuppance, both cued from Batman's dialogue. "He's still upset that I made fun of him when he was 15 years old," Batman nonchalantly tells Oracle before continuing, "and he's even more upset that I've beaten him every time we've gone head-to-head since I turned 20. If you've been chasing the shadow of someone who never came after you, they've been beating the wheels off of you for most of it, there's more there than fighting. There's a joke about a hunter who goes up to the woods and eventually the bear, the punchline is, bear says to him, he's like, you're not here for the hunting, are you? That's one of the longest and frankly intimate relationships that Batman has ever had. That's not saying it's an obsessive kind of crush on behalf of the ivory-clad crime fighter Ghostmaker, but it's also not not saying that. Second, Ghostmaker's made a big point of shouting how smart he is, but a second bit of dialogue has Batman, in essence, showing how sloppy and amateurish the newcomer, or not newcomer, whatever, his work is. It's cold. The way Batman does it is a devastating show of bat preparation, and that's one of the points where it gets funny. Has Batman been leading Ghostmaker on for years, toying with this guy? Is Ghostmaker really not as good as he thinks he is, or is he being shown as? Well, since the book isn't called Ghostmaker, probably not, but it's a long way to go for such a fall without stakes. Apologies to the Flying Graysons. That brings us to the good stuff, which is largely dialogue-based. Harley Quinn makes a star turn as she wrestles with what to do with her life, and that ends up fighting Clown Hunter. Honestly, that's not fair. She doesn't so much fight him any more than a cat fights with a particularly large mouse. Mice don't win against cats in enough numbers for anyone to consider it a thing. Like her fight with Punchline, these are neophytes who are simply outclassed. Harley plays that for laughs, making fun of his age. Quote, "Did you think people were going to mistake you for a grown-up?" His hygiene, his outfit, and more. It's a hoot. As such, James Tynion IV's script is a mixed bag, giving gifts and lumps of coal an equal share. However, the artwork from Carlo Pagulian, Danny Mickey, Guillaume March, David Barron, and Clayton Cowles has no soft spots, perfectly capturing this battle and a surprisingly effective flashback with crisp lines and effective visual storytelling, such as the box-marked district attorney or the shot in this book of Orphan. There's no shortage of things to see,
but a lot of it won't hold up to scrutiny, accomplishing what it did well in spite of Batman, not because of him. So that rating would be meh. Finally, we have a section marked No, Just No, and it's for books that are abjectly terrible and should not be purchased under any circumstances. And there we find another bad book, Nightwing number 76 from DC Comics, with the creative team of Dan Jurgens, Ronan Cliquette, Nick Filardi, and Anne World Design. In 2018, God, we were so innocent back then. In 2018, Batman number 55 showed the KGB shooting a glancing shot off the skull of Dick Grayson, robbing the Bat's erstwhile ward of his memories between the death of his parents and that moment. He still had the muscle memory, could still do Nightwing-esque things, but didn't remember dating Batgirl, being a spy, being Batman, any of it. On the surface, this was ridiculous. Nightwing, and by extension Dick Grayson, is a marginally well-recognized licensed character that has appeared in multiple other media. The chance that he would not return to his spandex status quo was wildly implausible, given the essentially static nature of most licensed characters. This issue finally allows all that tedious business to be done, allowing everyone to finally say, at last, it's over. This feeling of relief should not come with a great sense of joy. It is the grim and workmanlike method that got us here, with a contrived battle between Nightwing and the perhaps again relevant KG Beast. Russian? And an equally contrived emotional confrontation with the bartender B that had taken in the amnesiac Grayson like a well-toned lost puppy. Dan Jurgens is a comic book legend, and his script admirably struggles to make something of this pile of scraps and tedium pretending to be a plot. Writing on one of the best-selling comic stories ever doesn't help you when you have to fit the toys precisely back into the containers with no accessories left over. Likewise, Ronan Cliquette, Nick Filardi, and the team at Anne World Design could only put so much lipstick on this pig. They skillfully show Nightwing dun-mochin' KG Beast through a battle in ways that Spider-Man would appreciate. The issue here is that it all just feels so unnecessary. The hand-wringing, the rooftop teardrops. It's all so overwrought, given that it's literally a tale of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Remember what you knew about Nightwing back in 2018? He's exactly back to that. Total reset, just like an Atari 2600. Do you really want to pay? Checking notes here. $4 for that? Of course you don't. Rating? No. Just no. As such, with three great buys over one really terrible book, let's call this week a win and move on with our lives. As always, I hope you're wearing a mask. As always, I hope you're safe. As always, I'm very grateful to Mo and Tuala for having me alongside. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Hey guys, Mo Kelly here. The new Daily Nerdorama podcast is featured on iHeartRadio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast feed to get your daily dose of nerd news. Also available on iTunes, Spreaker, and all the top podcasting apps. It's free and perfect for everyone in your nerd family.
Nerdorama is produced by Tuala Sharp and continues to be a segment on The Mo Kelly Show, weekends on KFI Los Angeles. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Nerdorama News.
Until next time, keep it comic.